I've had to kind of embrace the fact that I am a carer now. It's really hard to kind of get your head around that. And the feminist voice in my head is screaming, don't give up your career. But actually what I want to do is try and make it work for me rather than me trying to change it.
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it. I'm Jennifer Cox.
And I'm Salima Saxton.
Riddle me this, Salima, with your Cambridge degree and your excellent brain. Why have countless successive governments failed to solve the caring problem of this country?
When you say this country, you mean Britain.
I mean Britain, because I've got the numbers for Britain.
Because they're bastards? I mean, sorry to be cynical.
You know that I have the answer, because I've got a sheaf of papers in front of me that I'm rattling away. There are 1.25 million sandwich carers in the UK, as recorded. And we know sandwich carers is somebody caring for an older relative as well as a young family. Now, I know for a fact that the actual number is higher because so many people don't think of caring as an identity.
No.
Instead, they think of it as just a natural part of life or, you know, an obligation, which is partially why the government conveniently hasn't gotten to grips with providing a real solution. The other reason is that 68% of these sandwich carers, remember, these are just the recorded numbers, are women. And women are not permitted to speak up about their dissatisfaction or rage. They'd be seen as uncaring, as cruel, shirking their responsibilities. But if you put the problem back to these women who are voiceless, it sort of sorts the whole thing out. It's gone under the carpet. We can leave it there. And that's the answer to my riddle me re.
Okay, well, thank you for answering your riddle, Miri. Well, I'm very pleased that we're doing this special episode, actually, this week, then, in aid of
for
National Carers
Week.
Yes. So we must say this is a British thing, isn't it? Mm. It's the first week of June mm-hmm. of every year, mm-hmm. National Carers Week.
So who have we got with us today?
So our first guest is Penny Winsor. She's an acclaimed author. She's a book coach. She's a podcaster herself of the brilliant, brilliant pod, Not Too Busy to Write. She's a parent and she's a carer. Oh, and she's recently swapped hometowns, actually, with our fellow guest, Charlotte Adorian. Charlotte hosts the brilliant Village Lantern podcast, and she's recently moved with her family from London to Melbourne. Both her children, Essie and Woody, have autism. And as a family, they've launched Woodism, which is an award-winning art collaboration between Woody and his dad, who has turned Woody's unique phrases into liner cut prints. And my particular favourite one is, I love you all the way to the end of counting.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, we much appreciate it. So shall we dive straight in?
I'll go with the first question, the first formal question. What makes you angry, Penny and Charlotte?
You should go first, Penny. Go for it.
I've been really surprised, actually, by how the older I get, the angrier I get about everything. There is this narrative, I think, that as you get older, you get, you know, there's a lot of talk about, oh, I don't give any fucks anymore. Actually, you know, I do give a fuck. I give a fuck about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so, of course, that means lots of things make you really angry. You know, the more life experience we have, the more injustice we see around us.
Yeah.
Charlotte?
Yes. I mean, this whole kind of angry women thing is, if you're not angry, isn't there that quote, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention or something? And I feel like the people that aren't angry are probably the men, to be honest, or they're the ones or they're the ones that don't directly engage, get affected by issues that we are facing.
Do you think life? That it's actually that there were women who, many women, I would say, who are sort of forgot to get angry and never developed and weren't encouraged to develop a vocabulary for it. So it just sort of stays there in a nice little package kind of under the surface. And normally gets conveniently diagnosed as something else, like anxiety, like depression, you know, like migraines. And yeah. this is why we've started this, essentially, is because there's so much mistaken rage out there.
Also, it's been interesting, some of the response, actually, because some people have gone, you've never struck me as an angry person, Salima. I think we're all much more multifaceted and able to express anger in many, many different ways. Mm-hmm. And actually, if we all were all listening and paying attention to every other human where we could, I think we would all connect with some kind of anger within us. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to it being National Carers Week, actually, as well. But Charlotte, continuing on with what you were initially saying, would any of that anger come with navigating being a carer as well as being a parent, as well as being a woman?
Well, I think it's funny because I've had quite a kind of lesson from my autistic kids on, you know, they really hate unfairness. Like their gauge for unfairness is really solid. They hate being wronged. And to be honest, a lot of my rage comes from the world not being a kind of level playing field. And if you add in things like being an unpaid carer, or the fact that, you know, I'm a copywriter in advertising and by trade, and it's a very male dominated world. And, you know, when I left my job, my boss, I remember him saying, you know, when I think of a word to describe you, I think angry. And I was like, oh my God, like my 22 year career. And this is the one word. And I thought, well, yes, because it was never a level playing field. And I was always pissed off because I was like, I never got the good briefs, or I was always having to say, well, why am I doing a 4-day week now? I've got children. When the dads, when they start having babies, they don't put their hands up for a 4-day week. You know, why? Like, what do they not want to see their children? Who's looking after their children?
So I've always worked for myself. Well, since I was like 24, I've worked for myself. And When I went on maternity leave, I did not take maternity leave really with either of my two children. But it was interesting because I was spending a lot of time with other women who were on maternity leave.
Right.
Because I met through my local neighborhood. I lived in this fantastic inner London neighborhood where we had organized our own kind of meetups. There was loads of stuff going on. And I made some really good friends that year because there were women around, which was awesome because they were taking maternity leave. I was not jealous of them one bit, because I was dipping in and out, doing a bit of work, coming back and hanging out with them, hanging out with my child, going back to work, doing a bit of back and forth. It was great. It was the dream, basically. Mm. And they all went from really intense, full-on careers to looking after a baby 24/7. First of all, I was not jealous of that, those two extremes. And then they were having to make the choice between going part-time and basically still having to do the same job because otherwise they would never get anywhere in their career, but earning way less money, or they would go back full-time and they would spend all their money on care for their child and also feel really, really, really guilty and also not really want to be away 5 days a week from their child either. I just felt like there was no good choices there. It just felt like that was the, what choices any of those.
And if you take the time, then you take the hit. Your career takes the hit because you lose all of those years while everyone else is still kind of slogging away trying to make it work.
Absolutely. And I mean, even I, you know, I was so much more affected financially by having kids than I thought I was going to be. I was the high earner. I'm not married anymore, but at the time I was the high earner per day. And I thought, well, that means that we prioritize me and my work. And then we did at first, and then slowly over time and second child, suddenly, you know, I'm not quite so much of a priority anymore, even though I was the higher earner initially. And I think that's actually really, really common as well. Yeah. And I think it's what I didn't understand when I was a younger woman was the hit, not just in going part-time, but the massive hit you take on your career for the rest of your career by slowing down a bit at that point, but also on your pension. You know, with the difference between women's and men's pensions is the pension gap is unbelievably huge, frighteningly huge.
Yes.
And it's because of the care work that women do.
It's so true. And then the care work that we do later at the end of the career, because the numbers there are still so
small. Yeah, it doesn't stop with children. I mean, obviously, you know, Charlotte and I have disabled children who require more support, But even if you don't have that and your children grow up, it's very likely that if you are the one at home caring for children, you're very likely to be the one that steps in when mum and dad-in-law need that support because, well, you've already worked part-time for years. So why wouldn't you step up and do that? You know, there's no catching up from that. You become the go-to person at that point.
I think also the lack of catching up, it comes down to identity and confidence, right? Now, having stepped out as an actor for, well, quite a few years when my three kids were young, launching myself back in has required, like, well, a kind of iron will inside, you know, kind of rhino skin. And I just keep thinking, well, you know, just now or never. So then I kind of oscillate between like wild, abandoned enthusiasm for what's going to happen and is happening and panic.
Yeah, I think it's underestimated the impact of taking either slowing down or taking a break from a career on what that does to you and what that does to other people's view of you. Mm. I was a photographer for many years. And when I first had children, that was my job. And it is actually a very masculine role. You know, there are now quite a few female photographers, but actually when I started out as an assistant, there was hardly any, even in like, you know, in the early 2000s, they were only just coming up. And I was the one that definitely on set, I worked with loads of women, but I was the one on set who had the kind of traditionally masculine role. And so when I had my second child, I do feel like I disappeared. People assumed I wouldn't work. I lost work because people just didn't ask me because I'd had a second child.
I'd love to know where your ambitions both lie for both of you right now. Have you got strong personal Penny Charlotte, unrelated to anybody else, ambitions?
It's very interesting because I've changed my entire life. I've moved from, you know, London, where I was born. I think I only ever lived a mile from where I was born to literally the other side of the world. And I'm in Penny's hometown, weirdly, and she's
amazing.
In mine now, which
is amazing.
And I've changed everything. And to be honest, it's weird because you want to cling on to things that you knew and loved. And I, you know, I've got this career in advertising that was 22, 23 year career that, you know, I worked bloody hard for, but the whole time I was fighting a system that wasn't set up for me to be in. So yes, it's quite a male madman kind of vibe and people would say it's changed a lot, but not if you've got, you know, children or anyone with additional needs that you need to care for or any of that. So the women that I'm meeting so many amazing women that have got insane careers and they've, you know, had to become carers and they've had to reinvent how they work. And maybe that's where the multi-hyphen method has come from, why so many women have lots of strings to their bows now, because to be honest, we can't put all our eggs in one basket anymore because we need flexibility to the point of breaking. I mean, we never know day to day. Like this morning, I was woken up by my daughter at 2 a.m. and that was the day. So if I had to go off and do, you know, a day in an advertising agency coming up with amazing ideas and writing brilliant stuff and presenting to clients, I'd be a dribble of a person and no one would get the best of me. So it's really difficult, but I've had to kind of, now I've changed my entire world. I mean, I don't seem to do anything by halves, but changing my entire world, it's like, maybe I need to reinvent what I see as success.
Great.
And actually for me now is being able to give my kids time. They need me now way more than they did. I think this is the issue when you've got children who have the disability, is it doesn't necessarily get easier the older they get. Often it can get harder and you're needed more. You know, I'm now dealing with lots of mental health issues, things I never thought I would have to deal with as a mum. There's none of this in the kind of baby books about how do you talk to your child who wants to, you know, kill themselves. It's really difficult. So you got to be there. You can't be like, sorry, I've got to go off to a meeting about, you know, a chocolate bar and sell a chocolate bar to millions of people. It's really difficult. And so not only is my ambition changed from being about, you know, me, it's like I've got to, yes, I need to make money for them because they're going to need financial stability growing up. But actually, it's almost like, where do I put my energy? Like, I have such little energy left for the bit that needs to make me money that actually I'm like, why am I giving it to huge multi corporations who are going, you know, I'm going to make billions off your ideas, whereas I'm getting an ulcer and a child who's sobbing and needs me. It's really difficult. So it's a bit of an epiphany for me.
It's a silencing that's the problem. You know, if what you choose to do is this, if these are your priorities, then you must be allowed those priorities, and people need to hear them and listen to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that, because a lot of carers' voices just get squashed because A, we're really, really tired. B, no one really wants to hear it. You know, they're like, oh, that sounds really hard. Poor thing. Anyway, cool. I'm just going to pop off to...
Well, that's why you got called angry, I think, is because it was really unwanted.
Yeah. And you kind of, if you explained it to people, A, they would just be like, shit, this person's moaning. And you're like, no, I just need to get across why today is quite a hard day, or, you know. And that's why I think a lot of, you know, coming to the other side of the world, weirdly, I've kind of formed this kind of underbelly of carers that, you know, my kindred spirits, and they're all from all walks of life. It's, I mean, the other day I was in the supermarket and I got this scream across from the other escalator saying, Charlotte, I need you. And I was like, who is this? And it was a friend of mine she's like a Jewish mom with two autistic children. And, you know, there's me in my kind of athleisure wear, and she's in, you know, she's completely different. We're very different people. I'm not religious. And she's like, I need you. And she's like, fell into my arms sobbing. And she's like, I can't do this anymore. And we had like a moment in the supermarket, and everyone was like kind of going around us. And I was like, you can do this. You're amazing. You know, she, her day was basically going to be spent, you know, coaxing one of her children off the sofa to, you know, even eat, you know, because her kids were in rock bottom burnout. Autistic burnout was just, I'm learning all about it. It's quite a full on thing. And, you know, we had this moment, and then we kind of buoyed each other up, and then off she went. And I thought, you know, these are my people. These are my people who you don't even need to, there's no rage anymore. The anger's gone. It's like, we don't have time for anger. We're too tired for the anger. It's just, I need you. Help me. Here's what you need. So she, like last week, this week I was in bed with flu. I texted her and said, I'm dying of flu. And she's like, I'm bringing a bolognese. You know, it's literally like, not like, what do you need? I'm so sorry. You're right. You know, it's like, what do you need? This is what I'm going to do. And those are the people that get you. And it's like, oh, it's just the rage goes. Cause you're on a level playing field.
Right.
You're back on the field with the people that know the juggle and the struggle. There's none of this kind of, you know, she doesn't say to me like, oh, I'm so worried about little Johnny's, you know, tennis lessons. It's like, the kids are not doing bloody after school activities like everyone else. You know, it's like, there's none of that kind of stuff I can't relate to. We're just on a level playing field. And I think that's when my anger goes. And that's when I feel almost weirdly at my most at peace and my most me. And that's a new thing. That's only just happened recently since moving to the other side of the world. Maybe I've, you know, when you have to make new friends, you make brand new friends that are your kindred spirits a bit more, maybe at this age, 46 years old, or however old I am.
Have you found, both of you, that your support systems or your friendships even have shifted as you become carers yourselves, or, you know, have surprising people entered your life, or surprising people left even, I suppose, but shifted?
I mean, what's amazing that I've found is some friends here who are kind of, my husband's from Melbourne, so that's why we moved, and that he's got some really old, wonderful friends. And, you know, often it's people who've got children who are similar to our own, who we kind of connect with. But his friends, there's only a few that have that. And there's one kind of friendship group in particular, and like, they've gone out of their way to learn about the type of autism that my children have, which is PDA, pathological demand avoidance, which is a specific type of presentation of autism. And they, you know, these friends have gone out of their way to learn about that so they can support us. And things like that, you just go, well, that's pretty fucking special. Like, that is a proper friend who, because we can't just leave our kids with anyone. And they're like, now I know, they've read up on it, they know, they're really empathetic, and they're like, we'll take whatever comes. We can leave our kids with them, and they're not flinching at the situation, and they've, because they know, they've got the backstory behind it, they've got all the you know, the articles, and they follow the same people as me on Instagram, and it's amazing.
Done the work.
That's a, that's they've done the work, and I think that's it, the amount of work I've done to just understand my children. And of course, why would everyone else have to do that? It's
but good friends will,
you don't normally have to do that in a friendship, you know.
Penny, what's been your experience?
It's been interesting, actually. Like, I one thing that's definitely happened is that because I can't, I don't have a flexible schedule. Our weekends are very rigid. I have to meet my son's needs, and I can't just take him to random places. I can't. So I don't really see friends with outside of my neighborhood with my kids. And that started quite young, where I'd just be like, you know what, let's just go out for a drink in the evening. I'll get a babysitter. You know, that's actually easier for me. It's really stressful for me to take him anywhere. And so I'm not going to be catching up with someone if I'm like constantly the hypervigilance I need to keep him safe. And also, he'll just, if he doesn't want to be somewhere, he will literally just scream until we leave. So there's sort of no point. So I sort of stopped doing that a really long time ago. It was sort of all right when he was a toddler, but sort of beyond that, I just stopped bothering. And so I don't see my friends, the friends that don't live in my immediate neighborhood, I don't see that often. And I don't see enough, I would say, for sure. But not that they're not there for me or anything, but I just naturally that happens. I think it happens anyway when your children start school and you end up in these very rigid routines of school term time and all that kind of stuff. But there are some people I don't see enough, but actually the friends that I've made in this neighborhood, and we moved here when my children were very small, have been incredible. I didn't really make any friends at all through my son's sort of peers because he's my eldest, he's 13 now and my daughter's 11, because wherever I went with him, preschool and then school, it was just constantly about his needs. I didn't have time to chat school dates. I didn't have time. He was never invited anywhere. He never went on any play dates. He couldn't have coped with them anyway. So we were in a very outside of that world. But my daughter's only 2 years younger, and actually I've made the most incredible friends through her. And all of my friends I've made through her have completely embraced Arthur. I've known him since he was quite young. And my daughter's friends know him. And, you know, to the point where I go on holiday with some of them and, you know, they help out, and I can go, there's some of them I can go around to their houses and Arthur's comfortable there. And so it has, they've been amazing actually. But actually the thing that's been interesting is that I was forced to ask for that help. I was forced to. I actually hate asking.
What do you mean you were forced to?
Well, I'm a single parent.
Yeah.
And I literally cannot do it sometimes. Like, for instance, you know, if my daughter was invited to a birthday party when she was too young to be kind of dropped and left, I either had to bring my son with me, but if he wasn't going to cope with it, someone else had to come get her and take her. It's either that or my daughter never goes out, you know, like, so I asked for things that I wouldn't have asked for if I hadn't been in that situation. I would message people, oh, who's going to so-and-so's party? Can anyone else swing by and pick up Agnes on the way? And someone would be like, yeah, sure, no problem at all. Or I'd take her there with my son, and my son maybe stopped coping after half an hour. I'd be like, I'm going to skip out. Can anyone else drop her home? And there'd be like three volunteers going, yeah, we'll drop her home, no problem. We're in this really quite incredible community here where people just stepped up. But I did have to say,
but you learned to ask.
Yeah. I learned to ask. And actually, this comes back to probably my other caring experience. I really, 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 really hate not being independent. I really do. And part of that comes down to, I was a young carer as well.
Oh, okay.
And I cared for my mum when I was a teenager. And if you meet and speak to any young carers, one of the things that you'll find is that they are hyper independent. You know, I had to learn how to look after myself very, very young. And so asking for help does not come naturally. Like, it doesn't for a lot of women, but for particularly for someone who didn't, I was not, I would say, being looked after anyone by anyone for a lot of the time from when I was about sort of 12. And so I learned to do it myself. And so in a way, having Arthur has sort of forced me to confront that and confront actually the challenges of that. And if he hadn't made me do it, you know, at this point, I'd be having to face that when I was older and needing to receive care myself, you know, because I think that's something about caring that we don't really talk about very much is that, you know, first of all, you know, we don't like talking about it because partly because we don't like the idea of having to receive it.
And, yes.
You know, we're very scared of having to receive it because we see it as something that is something that none of us wants. We talk about it as being the, you know, the worst thing in the world to go, you know, into a home where other people would care for us or to have our child constantly having to care for us. We talk about this like it's horrific. And yet it's a really natural human thing to happen that we need care towards the end of our lives if we're lucky enough to live a long life.
But I think there is also a real problem there because yes, there is a natural desire to care, but I think that desire is exploited in women. And I think it's interesting how many daughters step up and do that for their parents, for their aging parents. And probably, well, in fact, it's when you look at the numbers, it's borne out, it is far fewer men and far fewer men who are expected to.
Women are doing it at least 10 years earlier than
during
the sandwich. And so that has a massive impact. They're often doing it for much longer. I think double the amount of time that men are doing it. And also in terms of the people who are doing it for more than 35 hours a week, it's 75% women. So in terms of the amount they're doing, yes, it is much more women.
Didn't they work out that to replace unpaid care in the UK would cost something like £162 billion?
I mean, well, basically the amount of money that unpaid carers can, like in terms of what they contribute to the economy, is the equivalent of a whole nother NHS.
It costs the same as running the NHS.
It's insane. So if there wasn't unpaid carers, a whole society would collapse. It would completely collapse. I don't know what the figures are now. They're much higher because there's a lot more carers now than there was pre-pandemic.
Yes.
So because there's a lot more people living with chronic illness now.
If someone is a carer and they're listening to this right now and they're struggling, they've begun to care for somebody and they don't, and it's lonely, because I know just from a few friends of mine how isolating and lonely it can be. I appreciate not always, but for some, I can see how it can be. What do you do, like, if you need help?
I think the thing you have to do first is admit that that's what you're doing, that you're a carer. It can take people years to admit that that's what they're doing. They don't want to see it. I'm just a daughter. I'm just a daughter.
Totally doing her job. Doing what's expected.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just a parent. I'm just, you know, I'm just helping out my brother or my sister. I'm just helping. It's just what people do. No, the first thing you have to do is admit that that's, you know, this is work. This is unpaid work, but it is care work. And it's on top of the relationship you have with that person, and it complicates the relationship you have with that person. They might hate receiving that care, for instance. You know, it can be a very complicated relationship. So I think the number one thing you can do first of all is admit that's what you're doing. Like with a lot of things, as soon as you kind of admit it, then you can open up to other things, like maybe admitting that you might not be able to do it all on your own, which can be a really difficult thing, because there's a lot of, obviously, sometimes people, even though it's very difficult, want to be able to do it all on their own, think they should be able to do it all on their own, but physically can't anymore without some serious consequences. And so that can be a first step. What would you say, Charlotte?
Yeah, I mean, it's also connection with people that are similar to you, because silence is really dangerous. And I think, you know, Penny and I are both writers and we're obsessed with telling stories, and there's a reason that women need to tell stories, because otherwise it all just is really not said and
it gets lost. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, we really appreciate you both coming on.
Extremely grateful.
Yeah,
pleasure.
Bye guys, nice to meet you all. See ya.
Bye.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel-Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.